Welcome to Business Spotlight on Money Radio WPSE. Business Spotlight is heard weekly at this time on 1450 AM and 107.1 FM. Today, Dr. Ralph Ford, Chancellor at Penn State Barron, brings you another episode of Barron Talks.
Well, welcome to a very special edition of Barron Talks. Barron Talks is our podcast where we have discussions with interesting people in the Erie community who are connected with Penn State Barron. And today it is just a great honor to have with us the Honorable Tom Ridge, former governor of Pennsylvania. Welcome here, Governor Ridge.
Well, Dr. Ford, it's a great pleasure to join you. Hope all is well with you, faculty and students. Hope everybody's getting back to a new sense of normalcy, but I guess it'll take some adjustments.
It's going to take some adjustment, but we are getting there. It's a residential experience here on campus. Some of our students are here on campus. Others are studying off campus. It is a mix, but we are doing something that's unprecedented, and we can get, if we have time, we can talk about that as well. But first, I want to embarrass you a little bit and talk about all the great things you've done. So I'm going to read a little bit about your bio. You are an Erie native. We're all very proud of you here. You served 2 terms as our governor, 6 terms in the U.S. House of Representatives. After the September 11 terror attacks, you were appointed the first secretary of the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and built an organization from whole cloth. You today are chairman of Ridge Global, which focuses on cybersecurity, international security, and risk management issues. And you have appeared on this program before, so welcome back. You are our first repeat guest.
Yeah, thank you. Great pleasure to be back with you.
Well, we're living in, by any measure, in the most unusual time. A global pandemic has idled the economy. It's killed more than 190,000 Americans. We've had to rethink our approach to, how we meet with our friends and family. Is it safe to visit our grandmother? Sporting events, schooling, as you already pointed to, the college experience has changed. And we're doing this in the run-up to a highly, highly contentious national election. So I want to start and ask you, how concerned are you about the months ahead and what's facing us?
Well, first of all, I'm glad you identified some of the critical and most unusual convergence of events. When you think about the United States today, we got Mother Nature's fury in the form of wildfires and hurricanes. We've got a very toxic political environment. We got COVID-19. And the last two forces, as it were, it's like a tsunami of events. I mean, it's very turbulent times. But the COVID-19 environment has affected everything, and clearly one of the other elements in our society that will affect will be the elections. And so the run-up to November 3rd is going to be a challenge for both candidates. I've referred to the environment as being toxic. I believe it is. I think with all due respect to your listeners, everyone should know that back in 2015, before Donald Trump was even nominated, I distanced myself from him and his candidacy for many reasons. I remain there. But as I take a look at the political environment, I think it's going to be a brutal, potentially nasty campaign. I think the president who's voting absentee, but is questioning the legitimacy of this most fundamental process and this incredible experiment of self-government, when he concluded several weeks ago that the only way he could lose the election is if the election was rigged. That certainly is more than distressing. It's hardly presidential and unworthy of any president with 2 months to go to be talking about ignoring whatever the verdict of the voters are. And so that is very disturbing to me. It's also equally disturbing that he has refused to recognize that COVID-19, the pandemic, puts a lot of people, particularly those with pre-existing conditions and other reasons, who are not going to go to the polls and they want to vote absentee, and he's already discredited their voices. So again, I think it's going to be very close. I think it'd be a narrow win. Today, if I had my crystal ball, I would say that Vice President Biden probably prevails with the majority vote. But I think today, since we all know the Constitution says we elect our presidents through the Electoral College, I think right now it's a toss-up. So I think you and everybody else, fasten your seatbelts. It's going to be an incredible couple of months. And the debates are really going to be critical this time around, I believe.
Well, let's go a little bit further into some of those comments. You know, your observation about a president not, you know, indicating they wouldn't accept the result of the election. I don't think we've never seen that in the United States, that even with some of our, you know, more questionable presidents, and they've all been pretty good, but I mean, we've never seen that. That's like a different country to us.
Well, you know, it's so unworthy of the individual we elect as president. America speaks every 4 years as to who it wants to lead, not only us but the free world, although our relationship with our traditional allies has deteriorated rather substantially, in my judgment, over the past 4 years because of this president. But it's beyond self-serving narcissism. It may have been an approach he could take when he was running a company, but it's certainly not an observation worthy of anyone who seeks to lead America by already prejudging outcome, predetermining the outcome, and basically dissing the entire electoral process. So I hope people pay attention, and I'm not going to encourage everybody listening to do any other than vote, vote, vote. I've often thought, Dr. Ford, that sometimes we teach voting as a privilege. I don't think it's a privilege. I think it's a civic responsibility. So I hope all your listeners are registered and vote either in person or absentee.
Well, we are working here on campus to make sure our students understand the importance of getting out to vote. It is critical in any year, particularly so right now, and elections do have consequences, and we should never doubt that. I'd like to ask a question about this organization. You are chair of the Vote Safe Initiative, and you're co-chairing it with Jennifer Granholm, the governor, former governor of Michigan. Can you tell us about that initiative? What's
it about? Thank you so much for asking. First of all, it is a bipartisan initiative, a nonprofit. You identified my colleague, another public servant, who I respect, other side of the aisle, Democrat, former governor of Michigan. But our goal, frankly, is to ensure, working with the states, the governors and the secretary of states, that there are safe and secure voting options for Americans, in-person balloting or absentee balloting. And one of the challenges we have in that regard is the president has suggested that delay means fraud. And that's absolutely false. There's nothing in the history of America. And the Heritage Foundation took a look at 250 million votes cast by absentee ballot over the past 20 years and found like 200 cases of fraud that were prosecuted. So, but our goal is to make sure, one, people understand how important it is to register to vote, but also to preserve that absentee option and to encourage some of the states, frankly, to move up their processing of these absentee ballots, because there will be an unprecedented number of people voting absentee. It's very unlikely that we're going to know the winner of the Electoral College on the night of November 3rd. So we encourage everyone to vote. We encourage everyone to be patient. We encourage everyone to look at November 3rd, not as the day we'll know who the next president is, but it's the last day to cast your ballot.
Well, is there, you know, you point out very, very correctly, there's just no real evidence of voter fraud in the past based on mail-in or very much at all. We have a very safe and secure electoral process, but is there something different about it this year? Something changed that would make the mail-in ballots different?
Well, Dr. Ford, it's a great question. I mean, what has changed is you have the President of the United States questioning the integrity of the process, which in the process of doing that, questions the integrity of about 8,000 to 10,000 men and women, Republicans and Democrats, mm-hmm. at the local level, who have a process to validate, legitimize the ballots that are cast. There are procedures, there are protocols. And will there be some votes disqualified? Yes. If people fill out their ballot improperly, mail it in too late, I mean, there's a lot of reasons it'll be disqualified. But there are barcodes on these ballots. There's signature verification on these absentee ballots. And they've been doing it that way for many, many years. And again, it's distressing. It's absolutely, I think it's an abomination. It's beyond distressing that the president would question absentee process to start with. But regardless of their political persuasion at the local level, these men and women do their jobs. I call them the guardians of democracy. Mm-hmm. It's an imperfect system. Yeah, some might sneak through, but they pretty much do their job, and they've done it very well for years. It's safe and secure. Just vote.
Right. This year, people have a very valid reason, too, to not want to go to the polls. If they have health conditions, they shouldn't be standing in a line with others and putting themselves at risk to coronavirus.
Well, Dr. Ford, the military, I was in the military. You have military votes absentee. You may or may not know, but I chair the National Organization on Disability. People with disabilities are much more inclined often to vote absentee. People with pre-existing conditions worried about standing in line outdoors will vote. And it's been a part of our electoral process since the Civil War. And I will reiterate, there is a very conservative Republican think tank called the Heritage Foundation. Mm-hmm. They looked at 250 million absentee votes cast over the past 20 years in presidential elections and found at the margin a couple of hundred cases of voter fraud. And by the way, it's illegal. There are very severe penalties if you're caught up in that. So the president's attitude and approach is very disruptive, and it's unfortunate. I think people just have to ignore them and register to vote. And if you choose to vote absentee, make sure you get it in on time.
So your group, Vote Safe. What is it that you think you're going to lend to the process? Is it education? Is it monitoring?
It's a great question. For the past couple of months, Governor Granholm and I have been doing interviews such as this. We've been on national media, local media, political news, talking with journalists across the country on this very issue. Initially, we sent out a letter to all the governors and the secretaries of state, encouraging them to do everything they can to make sure that both options are available. And more recently, we've been working to encourage the political leaders, and Pennsylvania is a good example, but also in Michigan and elsewhere, to change the regulations and the rules so they begin processing absentee ballots before Election Day. You know, there'll be hundreds of thousands of Pennsylvanians voting absentee this year, but the very processing of those ballots, that's taking the ballot out of the first envelope, taking it out of the second envelope, that process doesn't begin until Election Day. And because the president has basically suggested, but if there's a delay and we don't know the night of November 3rd, that must be there's some dastardly things going on at the local election bureaus and they're trying to steal my election. Well, that's not the case. The delay is occasioned by unprecedented use of absentee. So we've been working in Michigan and Pennsylvania to encourage legislators to change it so you can begin the processing of those votes long before Election Day. Even then, it's going to take several days. So we ought to look at November 3rd as the last day to cast your ballot and maybe consider November as election month.
Yeah, it seems like an outdated notion that you sit there and you wait until the evening, you know, and maybe they decide the election, right? I think that's the way people might be viewing it, when it could easily be done safely and fairly ahead of time.
Well, I think, Dr. Ford, you're right. We live in a just-in-time world. I mean, everybody's in a rush. Sometimes I say, you're in a rush to go nowhere. I mean, I've seen people pass me at 60 miles an hour to slam on the brakes to get to the red light. So the notion we have to know before we go to bed on November 3rd is ludicrous. There's nothing in the Constitution that says it. And I'll give you a little anecdote, Dr. Ford. There were 10 candidates at the local level during the primary season who on election night of the primary in Pennsylvania thought they had been victorious. Several days later, when all absentee ballots were cast, they had lost the election. So patience is required. and any effort to undermine the validity of the absentee ballot system, in my mind, is just purely improper, and I would argue un-American, because they're trying to deny the option to people to express their choice with the absentee ballot.
Yeah. Well, let's switch subjects to civility and civility in government. I think we at least like in our minds to believe that this country has a long tradition of people uniting for the common good in the time of crisis, whether it's a war, depression, or whatever else it may be. Maybe that's not true. You can tell me that. But you look at what's happening right now. We can't even seem to get our leaders to agree about how to handle the coronavirus. Is that, you know, is it different than in the past? Or are we just repeating history? Do we have a, you know, this vision of history that isn't true?
Well, Dr. Ford, I think the notion of civility in politics is worthy of a conversation, not just between the two of us, but worthy of a conversation within America. Because our politics over the past decade plus, and it didn't start with this president, although he's put jet fuel on. I mean, some of his remarks are absolutely incendiary, but it goes in both directions, I would say. It goes in both directions. Mm-hmm. And the analogy I like to use is if I have a dispute with my neighbor, maybe it's about a property line, maybe it's about whatever it might be, do I resolve that dispute by yelling, screaming, shouting obscenities, and do everything I can to antagonize the other side? Or do I, in a civil way, address my concerns and look for a solution? Well, I realize the world of government and politics is far more complicated than that, but I think the basic approach still would serve us well if people weren't so worried about winning the next election. And I view politics as being privileged to serve in public life for a long, long time. I've always felt there are two parts of the political government equation. You run to win, and the reason you run and you win after that is to govern. And it just seems to me over the past decade or so, there's more emphasis on winning than there is on governing. And when it becomes that disproportionate, when I'm more concerned about appealing to my base or trying to win the next election, I'm going to drive there's a harder edge to my rhetoric and maybe a harder edge to my political points of view. And I'm not as inclined to look for compromise or middle ground. So I think you're spot on. It's a conversation that America needs. And frankly, I wish we'd hold some of our political leaders on both sides, you know, more accountable for the lack of stability.
We really do need to hold them.
Can I give you a good example? Do you mind?
Sure.
Time for a good example.
Absolutely.
I worked with Allegheny College for years and years. We give a civility award. They're your friends, and you probably know the good people in Meadville, Pennsylvania. But 1 year, believe it or not, 1 year we gave the civility award to John McCain, and we always pick a Republican, and to Vice President Biden. And why did we do that? Well, for a couple of reasons. One, they come from when it comes to foreign policy, they're 180 degrees apart. But I had been in their company on multiple occasions, and you can't imagine the respectful and friendly and really personal and thoughtful relationship they had, even though their political views, particularly on foreign policy, were miles apart. And we also gave it to them because when Hillary Clinton said the Republicans are our enemies, he said, no, Vice President Biden said, they're not our enemies. They're our political opponents, but they hardly should be classified as their enemies. And the one anecdote we've talked about when we talked about my friend John McCain, he was doing his campaign against then to be elected Senator Obama. Someone attacked Obama as some kind of militant Muslim and really, really off the wall commentary. And John just looked at this protagonist and said, look, man, he is a man of faith. He's a decent man. Let's just talk about the issues and don't denigrate him personally. Well, where has that gone? That's we need to get back to that. You can have differing points of view, articulate them, but calmer heads normally try to find common ground.
You know, that it was a magnificent moment in American politics, and it wasn't all that long ago. That really was not that long ago in the span of history. when Senator McCain said that. And we should continue to hold that up. Well, let me ask you this. So, you know, you hit on what we do on college campuses. And I will tell you, actually, this is a cause I've been pushing the last several years, because what I've heard when I talk to our students too is, you know, they get caught up in Facebook. I ask them, do you have political discussions with each other? What their answer is, oh, we only talk to those who we know we agree with. It's too difficult to talk to the, there you go. Go ahead.
Oh, I do, Dr. Ford. It's fascinating to me. You know, I go back and I'm a dinosaur. Most of you students look at my age and say, God, what an old guy. What's he know? But I remember, I mean, part of the college experience, I've always thought, at least in my experience, with the conversations over lunch or dinner or in the rooms or whatever, and it was the exchange of opinions, differing opinions, as you pushed and probed and challenged each other, not because you doubted the sincerity of the other person or not that you were judgmental in terms of their motivation or their morality. You just, you challenge each other. I thought that was to be part of the college experience. It was that rigorous exchange of views and the need to intellectually defend your point of view, not in a strident, offensive way, but it just, and it makes you sharpen your own thinking. So I'm not surprised it's happened. Frankly, look, you don't have to be a college student. People who watch Fox have generally got a point of view that's consistent with the normal point of view that most of their, not all, but a lot of their some of them aren't journalists, they're entertainers. And people watch MSNBC because they get their point of view reinforced. I understand that, but I don't think it's healthy. I think what you need is a respectful conversation, discussion, and debate. That's the only way you sharpen your own point of view, and frankly, it's the only way you can get to resolve issues. You know, my mom was a Republican committee woman. My dad was a lifelong Democrat. And I learned in all our discussions that more often than not, there's a common ground can be found and should be sought. And besides, neither party nor any candidate has the wisdom of Solomon or the prescience of an oracle. I mean, we don't know what the future will be. We can certainly shape it if we sit down together, identify problems, and then try to resolve them. That's for sure.
Now, you could take almost any issue, a social issue in our country, whether it's helping those in poverty or we can pick many. And there are different valid points on each side. And we've just got to figure out a way in between to work them through. And just because you differ, I mean, I know we're talking about the same thing. And people just need to understand. You said something really that I often like to make the point with people. And that is, you don't get better by, talking to people who reinforce your point of view. It's maybe very difficult, but hearing your greatest critics is often they're often your best friend, actually. You just have to realize.
Well, you know what? I there's a real practical term. You know, I've been privileged to serve in government for a long time, elected office and obviously appointed office. And frankly, some of my best friends, and I wouldn't even use the word criticism, some of my best friends and people that were closest to me, for whom I had great admiration and great affection, would say, I think you're wrong and this is why. Or I think you did that poorly, here's how you should do it differently. Or I think you missed their point, they're trying to say this and I think you should. That kind of intellectual honesty and rigor, whether it's in personal relationships, business relationships, or political relationships, I think is absolutely essential if your goal, and ultimately I think everyone's goal, is to do more and to do better. But if you were so ideological that you refuse to see the value even of the debate, let alone of an idea on the other side. Listen, I would say this, and I would be very interested in what some of your political or government professors think, but I look at the Constitution and a sense of government. The Constitution itself is a series of compromises. But if both political parties become so extreme and so ideological, so that they not only no longer even tolerate dissent or differences of opinion within their own party, let alone with the other side. If compromise isn't possible, then we have the wrong system of government. We should have a parliament and a prime minister. You know, in Great Britain, you're either a liberal or conservative, and you vote that way, straight party line. And you have the upheavals in government from time to time. Well, that's not how we were designed, and I think we've got to get back to our basics.
You know, in talking about getting back to basics, is there still room? I mean, how do we get moderates back at the table? Do they have a meaningful role?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I think, I was often accused of being a rhino, moderate Republican, whatever the hell that is, pardon my French. But, you know, I voted, I was privileged to serve in the House with President Reagan was there and for a while with President Bush. I was voted with the Republican Party probably 85-90% of the time. But there was a great, I think it was Lord Acton, a great British MP who, in the face of criticism from his constituency in England, reminded the electorate that he appreciated their point of view, but what he felt he owed them was his best judgment. Isn't that interesting, Todd? You've elected me to exercise my best judgment. So that's the first thing I think we ought to be more tolerant of that. And secondly, I think redistricting of congressional districts should go a long way.
Yeah.
It's a political process. There are a lot of challenges to it. Whether or not it'll ever be changed, the process will be changed, I don't know. But there are very few districts that one would not categorize as safe, meaning that one party or the other has a distinct advantage. And when that occurs, you find that these within that party sometimes go to the extremes in order to get elected, and they bring that point of view to Congress or to the state legislature, more to Congress. And I, you know, my old congressional district was a swing district. There were, I don't know, maybe 100,000 more Democrats than Republicans, but, you know, it was a pretty common sense approach in North toward government and politics, many times bipartisan. They'd look for people to solve problems. So I think, I think part of the answer is rethinking how we make our districts and even having the party leaders become a lot more tolerant of dissent. I know from time to time I would tell my leaders if there was a tough vote coming up and that I wasn't going to be with them, I would not pull any surprises. I'd say on this one, I'm going the other way. Okay. No surprises, but tolerating dissent within your own party, I think, is a healthy anecdote to this craziness as both parties move further and further right and left.
Thank you so much. This has been a tremendous conversation, Governor Ridge. You've been listening to Barron Talks. I'm Chancellor Ralph Ford. Again, my guest today is the Honorable Governor Tom Ridge. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Business Spotlight on Money Radio WPSE. Join us again on Saturday morning at 9:30 a.m. for an encore presentation of Barron Talks with Dr. Ralph Ford, Chancellor of Penn State Barron.